So once again, we have the afternoon before us, and you have, some of you may feel wide awake, alert, others may feel a little heaviness from the meal, and neither of those are problems. We accept whatever the body is handing us at the moment. But we shouldn't accept whatever the mind is handing us, that we have choices about. And so if we have a sluggishness of the mind, then we can use imagination and memory to rouse some energy. So the Buddha, very specifically, under right effort, the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, under right effort, you will find a repetition of this phrase of stirring up energy, making effort, stirring up energy. And so it's a very deliberate attempt to, you can see the idea of stirring. It's the motion, interior motion of bringing up forth energy. Again, it's not merely watching. There's a very proactive side to the path. It's very energetic. It's an endeavor. And some of the similes the Buddha uses are, for instance, as a fletcher straightens his arrows. A fletcher is one who makes arrows. Not many of them around now, but one who makes arrows, and you know, there's a lot of process in making it straight. And then, or as a farmer irrigates his fields by channels the water to the field. So this is you can see that this is a process of craft and endeavor. It's a very active thing, and you're reshaping and redirecting. So both of those similes, arrow making, is shaping, as the fletcher shapes his arrows, as the farmer channels the water where he needs it. So we're channeling, redirecting thoughts and directing emotions to where we need them. We need to explore around where our life is dry, is not yielding the nutriment and the abundance that it could. And so that's where we have to channel. If it's the lack of goodwill and emotion, then we need to kind of specialize in that. We have to bring up, we have to find goodwill first, feel what it's like. So that's the first thing, isn't it, to discover what does this word mean? This word, sometimes it's translated as loving kindness and so forth. The word in Pali is metta, which is from the word mitta or mitra, meaning friend. So it's a sense of profound friendliness. And where you feel friendliness is home. The idea of home. Now, some people didn't feel at home. So you're going to have to go in search of what it feels like to be at home someplace. And eventually, our aim is to feel at home wherever you are. And you feel that way because of this intrinsic sense of friendliness, which is also disarming. It means that your sense of discomfort and slight sense of alertness and danger is deactivated. The world remains an unpredictable and essentially dangerous place for such a thing as a vulnerable body. It's very soft. It's a bag of seawater. And kelp for the... and a lot of sharp objects out there. however, there's no that's a fact, but it doesn't mean that it has to be an emotional foundation. You have to let go of this inherent sense of danger, not because it's safe, not because nothing will happen to you or there's some magic spell that keeps you from all the possibilities of human experience, but because it's not a sensible way to live. What you want to do is have appropriate responses to the situation, but the negative emotions of fear and worry and anticipation and so forth of negative events are not necessary. They don't enhance your survival rate, actually. They're kind of built in by nature. Maybe a rabbit has no choice about this because they're not reflective. They just have to have the sense of a little fear run through the body and then they flee. I have a lot of rabbits around my place, so you might find that I refer to rabbits often. Also moose, yes. However, humans are not rabbits. And we have the capacity to stand outside ourselves and look at what we're doing and to consider our emotions. And in the cases of danger and problems, we act on that to make ourselves safe if possible. But that emotional energy doesn't have to be based on fear. It doesn't have to be based on anger or any of those negative emotions. There's a lot of emotions that get things done. Negative ones get things done. They are quite powerful, but they also destroy your little inner ecology. You have an ecology. You're a rainforest, you know. You're a very complex and amazing ecological system. And we don't want to pour any kind of toxins into that structure. And some of the negative emotions are toxic. Especially if we're involved in trying to save a rainforest. It'd be a shame to save a rainforest and destroy yourself in the process. There's no need for that. There's natural, very beautiful emotional structures that have very good products. And one of them is goodwill, generosity, kindness, lucidity, clarity. These are all extremely productive. Curiosity is good. Creativity, patience, interest in learning. These produce the best experiences and products of human history. They produce art and music, and they produce the best thoughts on how to organize and be with other people. And so anger is not how these things are produced. Of course, anger can produce quite the effect in hostile emotions or hostile relationships, also in wars and so forth. And greed also is a great motivator. Gets things done. What is it? Some say the world will end by fire, others say by ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if I had to perish twice, ice is nice and would suffice. So ice is is hate. Ice is hate. Fire is desire. I didn't make that up. That's Robert Frost. And indeed, he's right. Of what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. Desire is actually a very, very powerful and hard to get rid of distortion of the mind. These are distortions of mind, distortions of clarity, Anger, hate, you know, ice is more, it's easier to give up, you know, when you want to come in from the cold. It's a very unpleasant feeling. Anger is never accompanied by a pleasant feeling. So those who are given to anger should only be asked to reflect on it and ask, when you're actually angry, how does it feel? And just tell me honestly how it feels. And you will, sometimes they're confused. They think that somehow anger is a release or something. No, it's actually after the anger has subsided, or whatever the frustration was before it. The anger is a way of letting go of the frustration, but the anger itself is always an unpleasant feeling. Afterwards, when the anger has departed, you might think, oh, see, that felt good. No, it didn't feel good. It feels good now. The anger's gone. So, however, then part of desire is unfortunately sometimes accompanied by a pleasant feeling. So it's much more difficult to get rid of. However, it is a form of a perpetual lack. It creates a sense of that I'm not complete without whatever it is that I want. So there's a downside to desire, and that is you create the lack, and then you chase what it is. The lack is not there first. You create the lack. It just happens very quickly. And then you feel that you can't be full until you get the thing you want. So these are how do we disturb the mind? We're trying to... So when you do have moments of peace, and you will notice that two things are missing. Desire and anger. They're never there. You can't have... It's mutually exclusive with peace. You can't be in the middle of anger and be peaceful. And you can't be with desire, that means sense of lack, and be peaceful, because peace is a experience of fullness, contentment, completion. Now, it's not that kind of peace where there's an absence of war. That's the social peace. And a lot of people are, you know, they just find it restless. That was great. That war is a very interesting, great adventure. Or something. It gives you something to do with your life. And so some people are afraid of peace. And in this, social wars, but also family wars, you know, a relationship without the tension and melodrama of it, they wonder what, they would feel not alive somehow. And that's a shame, because that feeling of relying on that is, that's how bad the situation is. If that's better than how you feel without it, then you really have to do something about that, because peace is not the absence of this tension. It's the presence of the positive. The mind emerges from behind the clouds and shines. So this is what we're endlessly into, is like saying, why is it I'm always, you know, chasing around after something? Why am I afraid to be still? Why am I afraid to just be? What is it that gets me up after 15 minutes and chasing back around in the world? Who is commanding me? That's, well, we call it agitation, restlessness. The sense that there's a harsh and demanding master that just won't let you sit down and stay still. As soon as you do, you feel uncomfortable, bored, sleepy, deprived, because you don't have a place to go that you is beautiful and you that where you could stay there all day. So that's really what we're looking for, is that to find our way to that. Once you've got that, it's very nice. You can retire on a small pension right there. You don't have to chase around in the world anymore. You have something very nice just on your back porch. You no longer have to feed to get from the world all the time. You have this sense of contentment and fullness. That's a very profound and delightful thing to arrive at. Now, it doesn't have to be that profound, even just on the edge of this samadhi, this peacefulness, is a place of a profound peace. You don't have to be in a very profound trance or depth of trance or anything like that. It's just the absence of the irritations, psychic irritants, and the presence of just light and positive energy. And this is not something that just exhausts itself. You can sustain it as long as possible. It may go on for days and days and days. It may be a little you may not be that skillful, but even if you taste it for half an hour or an hour or so forth, it restores you. So that is, the Buddha is pointing at that. That's towards the upper part of the path, what's called the higher mind. So that this meditation is the cultivation of the higher mind. We, presuming that we have understood that we need to behave ourselves in an appropriate way in an interaction with others in the world, we need to keep trouble from coming up from that. We have to be circumspect and watch our speech and action and so forth, because we don't want to have any regrets. After that, then what? Well, now you should go on and into the higher development of the higher mind. And so this is why we're spending such time looking at the mind, watching the mind, see how it wanders, bringing it back, interrupting it, understanding, listening to the strategies. And so this is just the game plan, the process, the craft of the mind. The craft of the mind and the craft of the heart, really. And that craft, you know, you've been taught in school all kinds of intellectual processes and trained your mind in that way. However, has limited effect on the emotional structure. So this is a training of the towards the emotional structure, the how you feel. So meditation is about how you feel, not a philosophy, not a process of thinking, but they're servants. They're mere servants of the higher goal, which is the fulfillment of the heart, the emotional structure, the existential ease. So this is we will continue in the afternoon to cultivate this, and you know, maybe spend the afternoon on the bringing up of this positive thing. And if there's any resistance in you, you're just asking why. If, for instance, if you have some events in your life that feel great impediments to this, the Buddha is encouraging you to just forgive. If it was forgive somebody else or forgive yourself or just to let it go. And he's got all kinds of examples of people who had all kinds of... They did things that are hard to think that anybody can forgive themselves for it. And they events happen to them that you think would be hard to get over. And it's very important that he has these characters because they do get over it. Sometimes they get over it in a finger snap. Rather than a gradual process, they just realize that you are free to walk out of these things. It is possible to let them go, burdens. At that point, you become the end of remorse, the end of disturbance of conscience, the end of trauma. And you walk into an unburdened sense. So he's encouraging people to say, you can do that. It's possible. If the mind can just catch a whiff of that open door, a little glint of sunlight through a crack in the wall, so you just open that, step out there. So this is... extend the invitation, which has been handed down for 2,500 years, to forgive and forget and to step out the doors into a peaceful state and just believe that it's possible. Okay, so we will just meditate since I've talked for a while, and then we'll just have a short meditation, and then we'll do some more walking meditation outside.